Hi, you're listening to The Rule of Three. I'm Tim Slagle, and over on the other side, we have Mr. Brian Miller.
Hello.
It's Brian. You had said that you had a really interesting story.
Yeah, I had a really, had a very interesting week. My wife and I rent a house from a very sweet old lady. We've lived here for a couple of years in Minneapolis by a very pretty lake. And the old lady passed away earlier this year, which was very sad. And when she did so, it set into motion a kind of hellscape of financial and real estate trauma. Nobody knows who owns the house. The bank has the house in a reverse mortgage. It's been bought at a sheriff's sale by a guy who's waiting to redeem it. During that, there's this legal turmoil during which the bank has the ability, using a real estate agent, to try to get a better price. So what that resulted in was a REMAX agent scheduling somewhere between 60 and 80 showings in our house over a four-day period and telling us that legally we had no recourse to stop her from coming in anytime she wanted to, as long as she gave us 24 hours notice, and she could do this for one calendar year. And they had scheduled showings yesterday from 8 a.m. until 9:30 p.m. And I talked to some lawyers, and they said that technically within the law, as long as you give 24 hours notice, you can come in an unlimited number of times. So if you just give somebody every day you just call and say, we're coming in from 8 to 9, 9 to 10, 10 to 11, 11 to 12, you can just cover the whole day, and I can't restrict you from coming into my house. So I had this thought. I realized something. You know, there's a famous Bob Dylan quote, to live outside the law, you must be honest. I found out that to live inside the law, you must be dishonest. I called some lawyers, and my first instinct, by the way, when I heard this was, well, I'll teach this lady, when she tries to come in to sell my house, I will wallpaper my house with pornography, I will be naked when she comes in, I'll be doing jumping jacks and dancing parties, and I'll follow them, and I'll record the whole thing, and I'll make viral videos of it. And then I thought, you know, my wife has had a really rough year, and she's asked me to try to be a little more mature and make her life a little easier, and God knows she deserves it. And I thought, this is silly. I'm going to be a man. I'm going to be a grown-up. And I called this lady to try to work it out and to say, you can schedule some open houses and let's work together and I'll help you out. And she was so horrible. She refused.
They're not used to people being human.
No, they had no context for how to judge. I said, let's just deal with this as a human being. And she said, no. And so they started this endless parade of people through our house. And so I called some lawyers. And what the lawyers inevitably told me, both of them, said, well, you can't control people coming into your house, but you can exercise your own free speech to the absolute extremes within your house. To which I replied, do you mean like putting pornography all over my house and being naked? And they both said, yes, that's exactly what we mean. One guy suggested, he's like, do you like pickling or making kimchi? Could you boil some vinegar on your stove? He said, you know, you don't have to flush your toilets legally. I mean, the lawyers are basically telling me you have to transform yourself into a monster to fight a monster. And so that was my lesson for the day. But luckily, I will say, to some degree, civility did triumph because my wife is a very smart lady. And she got the sense that all these various realtors involved in these scenarios did not like one another. They kept talking smack about one another behind each other's backs. And so she said, one realtor has the key, but he doesn't really want to show the house, and another realtor wants to show the house. So you guys, we will never physically get up and open the door, but we will not bar you from coming into our house. Therefore, you both have to be here to make this happen every time. And the realtors hate each other so much that they canceled all the rest of the showings for now.
Wow.
Because my wife is a very, very smart lady.
Wow, that's beautiful. And it was just two realtors.
It was it's multiple realtors through REMAX, and then the guy who's the property manager that the lease is still through, who is now has no real boss. I mean, ever since the lady died, they have no real accountability. Although, to their fairness, to those guys, they haven't been jerks particularly. But yeah, he apparently doesn't like her, and she wants to do all the showings, and he's done a couple reasonable showings. You know, that's fine. You got to come in every now and then. We're not, You know, yeah. And so we found out basically that there's this giant loophole in landlord-tenant law, which I'm actually talking to a guy about going to the legislature next year with their when they go every year to kind of re-up the laws, because you have to be able to let an owner get into their property. Of course, that's understandable.
Sure.
But they realized that within the 24 hours notice, there's no real cap on how often you can give that notice. And to what extremes, you know, even just consigning it to business hours, say. Because we had at least 30 or 40 people through our apartment Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. My wife got 100 emails from Remax in a 30-hour period that she had to answer. 20 phone calls. They'd start calling us at 7:30 in the morning, and it would go through 8 o'clock at night.
Do you have to have email and a voicemail?
Well, they didn't...
You know, it seems to me that you could say, you know what, we've decided we're going to live Victorian. We are getting rid of our email. We are getting rid of our voicemail. If you want to give us notice, you have to send us a telegram.
Oh, that's interesting. And that might have worked. I mean, this is exactly the kind of thinking that we had to employ in all of this. That's great. But, you know, it's funny that what they don't realize is how close they came to being. I mean, part of me almost wish they would have gone ahead with it because, as you well know, we both know a lot of stand-up comedians. It was not hard to find volunteers for my naked poker and dancing party. I said, I'll provide all the booze and some snacks, and you guys just come over whenever you want, starting around 9 o'clock. And the only rule is we'll hang out and watch Netflix, you know, but you have to have your dong out all the time. And when people come to show the house, we have to dance.
Did you try to pitch an orgy to the wife?
No. Well, I didn't want to make the house too appealing to come into.
It might be the only opportunity you have to get her to agree.
I think somebody might be too eager to buy the house that way. They're like, you got to come see this house.
I had a problem. I had a problem with the landlord and showings. And what I learned, I learned a couple things. If you can get a prescription for like a box of syringes and just sprinkle them gingerly across the lawn, along with condoms out of the wrapper.
Yeah, that sends a certain.
And then also what you want to do is you want to get yourself some rat traps. And put them around the apartment.
A lawyer suggested that to me about, he said, like, get a bunch of mouse traps and he said, set out some stuff that makes it look ant killer and stuff like that. That makes it look like there's pests all over your house.
Ant killer and mouse traps? No, that's for wimps. You want the full size, rat trap. And get some like food coloring and chocolate syrup so you can actually put blood stains on it too. So it looks like, you might've caught a few.
it was insane to me, you know, that you have to, that within the law that you literally have to resort to that kind of childish or whatever. That I was literally, that was my legal recommendation, was to basically push the bounds of bad taste and childishness.
No, but that's, you know, that's the way it goes. I mean, it's one of the great tactics that unions use to when they don't want to go on strike, when they're forbidden to strike, is that they work within the letter of the law. And it's amazing, you know, how the employee manual, which is supposed to make employees more efficient, it's amazing how when it's actually followed, everything breaks down.
Yes, it's very difficult to write down instructions that are so thorough that a sneaky, devious mind cannot find a way to make a real pain in the middle of. I guess that's the whole basis of law, right?
Sure, but at this point. But not only that, that part of why the system works is because people don't follow the law.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
That's why under, you know, when you get societies like the Soviet Union where everything is defined – It all collapses because there's absolutely no flexibility.
You got to have flex. Otherwise, you got to live out. Because if you're outside the law, you have to have it. You have to be honest.
Right. And I think we're almost at 10, but wait, but I think it took about a minute of clapping. So I think we got about a minute left in this segment.
Well, hey, good time to plug. We never do this. You know, if you look us up on, I'm on Twitter at B Miller Comedy, if you want to look at there. And my website is Brian Miller Comedy, Brian with a Y.
And you can go to my website, www.timslagle.com. Well, actually, I don't think you need the W's anymore.
You don't even have to type the W's now.
I might as well say visit my MySpace page.
A girl one time made fun of me for dialing a 1 on my cell phone when I went to make like a long distance call. She's like, they don't do that anymore.
I've still got a phone that you have to do it though.
Oh, really?
Well, it's a landline.
Well, you can use it to call my realtor and tell her you're not answering our phones anymore.
And that's all for our first segment. See you back on the other side. I'm Tim Slagle.
I'm Brian Miller.
Welcome back to the Rule of Three. I'm Tim Slagle, and over on the other side, Mr. Brian Miller.
Yes, that's me, Brian Miller.
And what we are talking about in this segment is my website. It's timslagle.com. You can put the W's in there if you want.
It's really your choice. I like it. I find there's an old-fashioned part of me that my pinky finger just likes to hit that W 3 times. It just feels right.
Hit the W 3 times.
It's muscle memory. With all the porn I look at, it's like Pavlov. You know, my pinky finger is what starts the erogenous zone going.
Which, as my friend Ken Severa says, is the reason why the Cubs don't have a website, because they can't do it.
They can't put 3 W's together. That is good.
But not this year.
But not this year.
No. Farmer's Almanac is predicting extremely cold weather in hell as the Cubs are in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, last time they were in the playoffs, I was among the angry crowd with the Steve Bartman incident. So I still feel shamed from the Cubs' victories now.
I think, was it in Steinbeck actually mentioned it a couple times. He would talk about mob violence, but I think it was in Lifeboat, which John Steinbeck wrote the screenplay for.
Amazing movie, by the way. I love those Hitchcock movies that are in those like confined spaces like Lifeboat and Rope.
Yeah. And the guy said, we'll probably die on this boat. And one of the last things I ever did was join a mob.
Oh, that's a great line. I forgot about that.
Yeah, and that's I can't remember why I just brought that up.
Oh, because I was the Steve Bart. I was in the mob. I'll never forget my shame of my participation in that group of unruly douches. I was an unruly douche drinking old style and shouting.
Oh, man.
I was a young man. I was a young man full of vinegar and other things.
But anyway,
it's your website. Yes.
If you go to my website, I have a blog post where point out that Forbes has just named the 400 richest people in America.
Hmm.
Actually, in order to make the list, I think that you have to have 1.17 billion. That's the figure this year. It's the cutoff point.
I'm going to have to check with my accountant, but I don't think I make it.
Interestingly enough, yeah, neither do I.
Now, are we talking equity or liquid? That's different. Sorry, anyway.
No, that is. That is. And that's actually how Donald Trump made it onto the list. There's a story that I think it was Donald Trump's daughter told that they were walking into one of his properties. And what do they call those people now that live on the streets? You can't call them indigents anymore. Not bums, not hobos.
I think homeless is still the preferred nomenclature, I believe, right?
I think so.
And
of course, the big question as we're entering October, can kids still dress up?
Oh boy, that's interesting. That hobo was a really popular costume, even into the 80s when I was a kid.
Because it's easy.
Yeah, it's such a, you know, even as a kid, I remember being like, what a bummer. Like, you get to be Dracula, you get to be the Wolfman, I'm going to be a hobo. I'm drinking jug wine and riding the rails. It's really weird. It's like, it's not that different from dressing up your young daughter as a prostitute. Like, isn't that hilarious? She has to break the law to make ends meet.
I actually think that the hobo costume is a sure sign that your parents drink.
Yeah, absolutely. Even scarecrows, he's like, stuff some straw on your shirt and start walking.
You might not know this, that hobo is different than bum. Were you aware of that?
Was hobo specifically connotate a guy riding the rails versus a bum was bumming a ride?
No, they could both be bums.
Okay.
They could both be hobos. The difference is that a bum is just lazy. A hobo is actually working. A hobo is actually willing, you know, the will work for food sign.
Right. Well, of course, hobos, that was a Depression era phenomenon specifically. So these guys weren't, they were eager to work. They just didn't know how to find it. So they were traveling around looking for it.
Yeah. And they would go essentially from temporary job to temporary job.
I'm a man of means by no means, the king of the road.
Yeah, that's actually a hobo. It's kind of like an adventurer. It's kind of an explorer. It's kind of a romantic, really. If you know,
right? There's that great Mad Men episode, the Hobo Code, where he learns about all the symbols they carve into the fence posts.
Yeah, exactly.
That's interesting. Yeah, I'm with you. I never thought about that, but you're right. A bum is different than a hobo.
Yeah, so I think most people thought they were dressing like hobos, but they were just dressing like bums.
It was always sad when you didn't have to change out of your school clothes. You just segue right into Halloween, whatever. whatever your costume was, it shouldn't be that easy to transition. Yeah.
Sometimes a costume is as simple as a piece of charcoal on the boy's face.
Yeah, exactly. Or dad's cigarette ashes. Come here, boy. I'm gonna tap these in my hand.
Yeah, sorry. I'm too hungover to go to the store and get you that Ninja Turtle outfit. I'm over here by the ashtray.
You know, hobos were like Ninja Turtles, boy. A lot like Ninja Turtles.
But anyway, what's interesting about my blog article, to get back, is that the richest 400 are worth $2.37 trillion. That's the number. $2.37 trillion. If we took all the I think the top 400, if we took every dime they had,
sure,
it would run the government for 9 months.
Wow. Well,
so when people go out and say, well, we've got to tax the rich more, we could tax them 100%. And then that's not just their income, mind you, that's their assets. Because people always say, you know, we got to tax the rich. No, we never tax the rich. We never actually go into people's accounts and empty them. You know, that only happens in Greece. But no, we tax the people who make the most money, which
that's
you know
true.
Thing,
yeah, you know I see what you mean. Yeah, because the asset is really where the true riches lie.
Right. Do you know what it takes to be in the 1%? Any idea?
No.
$325,000 a year.
Million?
No, $325,000 a year puts you in the 1%.
Really?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I would
definitely thought it was higher.
You know, it's several Brian Millers and Tim Slagles added together.
Yes, right, right, right. Yeah,
but it's not outrageous. You and I both know at least a couple people.
Yeah, I can think of a couple people off the top of my head for sure.
That are in the 1%, and you know, and of course, the difference between Slagle and Miller is I'll bet you a few of those people rail against the 1%.
I don't know about that. But my 1%er guys are definitely Republicans.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Then I'm wrong.
Well, but put it this way, the two that spring to mind, I don't know if they want to be outed. I mean, they certainly...
No, they're no outing.
Yeah, no, but they certainly know who they are. They're nice people. They're very nice people.
Uh-huh. I was thinking some showbizzy types. Is that you probably know some 1% showbiz types.
I don't know as many successful showbiz types. Sadly, all my showbiz friends are...
Yeah, successful and showbiz type is a rare combination.
So, yeah, so Tim, we are very representative of all my showbiz friends. You and I are in the middle of the demo, my showbiz buddies.
Yeah, it's mostly because we put more emphasis on the show than the business.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I used to feel I don't know about bad about that, but weird about it. But I've come to just be fine with that. I really am. I don't have the ambition to sustain the kind of merch driven career that some, you know, the kind of what the, it's all about, you know, the merch career and the signing, and you're always the pressing the flesh, and, you know, I just want to write something funny.
Yeah.
It's not really that complicated for me.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing, is because I know a lot of guys who sell t-shirts.
Sure.
I don't begrudge anyone who does. I understand it fully. But the thing is, if you really got into this business so that you can inventory and fold t-shirts, why don't you just work at the Gap?
Absolutely. You will honestly make more money as a t-shirt salesman and work better hours. That said, I've been selling t-shirts in the last couple of months to pay off a very specific medical bill. My urologist was coming. You don't want your urologist to come collecting.
And sadly, we're out of time.
Sadly, just as we got to my urologist.
Yeah.
Who knows? Could be on some other future segment of The Rule of Three with Tim Slagle and Brian Miller.
Kind of talking about money.
Yeah.
And there's probably nobody who has the potential to live a richer lifestyle on the face of the earth than Pope Francis himself.
Absolutely. Yeah, the Vatican definitely would be falling that 1% with the assets, I'm thinking.
Oh, man, just the artwork.
Just, yeah, absolutely. It's, I mean, I assume, you know, they technically own the real estate. Does the Vatican own the real estate that all these churches are on in other countries? Or is that a church-to-church matter?
Huh. You know, that is an interesting question. Do the archdiocese own the property?
Yeah. Is it like franchises like McDonald's? I mean, I don't mean that. I really don't even mean that in a, well, I do mean that in a slightly disrespectful way, but it's a genuine curiosity because other churches don't really have, like, I was a member of the Methodist Church, and, you know, their command headquarters just doesn't exert that much influence. It's more of a guiding body of ideologues, not ideologues, but it's more about the principle than the property.
Well, interestingly, you know, I've thought about this a lot, and I don't believe the Protestant church as it exists today could ever have occurred without America.
Oh, I think absolutely. I mean, the John Wesley, who founded Methodism, was sort of an inherently American figure, riding his horse, spreading the word.
Right, right. It's truly, you know, people don't like to say that, to mention that the you know, the church and the U.S. government is bound, but I think they're intrinsically bound. I don't think you can separate them.
And I think you have to legally separate them to some degree. I think distinctions need to be made, but I think ideologically, yeah. I mean, ideologically, everything is connected. I mean, you can't. It's why it's tricky.
Right.
The whole taxing churches thing. It's like, well, politics and issues of morality so often interact that it's sort of phony to say that, like, your preacher could never touch on those.
Right, right. It's but I didn't want to get on a dissertation of the First Amendment here. All I was saying was that the Protestant Church kind of became a bottom up religion.
Agreed. Yes.
Whereas you know, is that there was choice for the first time. For the first time in the world, the United States allowed people to choose their religion, and because of that, people kind of went to the religion that they found, you know, most compatible with, you know, whereas before it was, well, if you live here, you belong to this religion, and if you don't, we are going to kill you.
Yeah, absolutely. Church of England or Vatican or whatever.
Right.
Whatever.
Very few places where you could, you know, where you could actually say, well, no, I'm going to try this religion and get away with it, which is why, you know, people fled to the United States. And once they got here and they separated a churchless state, people were allowed to pick and choose. And so, just like anything, just like, you know, just like market forces allow – make restaurants make the tastiest food for the lowest price, churches had to cater to the parishioners rather than the converts, and that's why in this country we have things like the mega churches and the televangelists and all sorts of varieties of religion that never before existed anywhere in the world.
So it's interesting, is like you said, from the mega church to, you know, I don't know, people who live in the Midwest will drive through and tell you you'll see those little churches that look like they seat 30 people. you know, along kind of along the side of the highway.
In a liquor store?
Yeah, absolutely. But those people.
You drive through a big city, you'll see crosses on the front of what used to be a liquor store.
Absolutely. And a lot of those turns, they may only have 40 people, but those 40 people are there every week.
For hours.
Yeah. In fact, there's probably some metric where, like, the fewer people in your church, the more time you spend with those people. And that's got to be some sort of algorithm we could figure out.
Well, I don't want to stray too far here, but originally we were talking, the idea was that we would talk about the fact that Pope's in town last week.
The head man from the head office, right?
Which is kind of interesting because all I could think of the entire week is because he's such an unusual Pope is that you could actually have a Pope, a rabbi, walking into a bar, and it would be a headline rather than a joke.
Absolutely. And I think it's interesting about the Pope is that people are on both sides are so quick to either totally support everything he does and then snap back and then totally be against everything that he does. You know, he's just making people on both sides so happy and so mad at these extremes.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's funny. It's like, well, don't you guys see that he's doing both? I mean, I think that's kind of admirable in a way. I mean, it implies some more personal ideology.
Well, all last week, it was, you know, if you've noticed the memes on Facebook, it was all, oh, Republicans can't get over the fact that the Pope is a Marxist and believes in climate change. Ha, ha, ha. And then news just came out yesterday.
Oh, right, that he meets with Kim Davis. who was
the Facebook subject for 2 weeks before that.
Right, and who is, make no mistake, an absolutely deplorable human being. I mean, to me, she physically looks like homophobia personified. Like, if homophobia could, like, become a gas and then gradually start to take form, it would ultimately look like to Kim Davis.
I don't... You know, I'm not that cruel with her. I really think that she just believes that that marriage should be in the traditional sense.
Except for she's been divorced 3 times and was having an affair in one. I have no tolerance for the religious hypocrisy where I'm not a fan of anybody telling anybody else what they can do. And again, if you want to work in a city government position, you're not going by God's laws. You're going by the city laws. That's just all. And you don't have to work for the city government. That's not – you're
right,
not enforced
to. But she wasn't violating city laws and she wasn't violating state laws. In fact, she was – she was working to the letter of the laws that she swore to uphold.
But the laws changed, I believe. Correct? Didn't the feds?
No. Though the Supreme Court said those laws are invalid.
Right. Well, there you go. So therefore, they are.
No, they're not.
If the Supreme Court,
the Supreme Court has no authority to invalidate state laws. I'm sorry, they don't. They do, and people go along with it, but they don't.
Well, I'm not arguing with you on there, but I will say again, as we were talking about in the first segment, spirit of the law, letter of the law. I'm not a fan of any discrimination ever, and I don't.
But see, there's the thing too. We probably shouldn't have gotten on this one because this one's our first serious argument. This is supposed to be a lighthearted show. I just wanted to talk about the Pope visiting.
But... Oh no, it's all good. No, hey, we disagree. It's fine. I think that's good. That's good pod. But but I do think the one thing we can agree on, while I disagree with the Pope potentially agreeing with Kim Davis, while I don't agree with Kim Davis, and I do think she's a bad person. I think people who judge others harshly while not judging themselves, that's the basic tenet of Christianity, if that's what you're going to lean on. But regardless,
I think the Pope
has a right to agree with Kim Davis, and I don't think it's so funny that people, like you said, people wanted to deify the Pope, and then all of a sudden it's, oh, but now he did one thing I disagree with, so now he's this huge jerk. Well, that's not how life works. People don't always agree on every issue. I'm fine with that. And I think the Pope can still be a very interesting, complex figure without falling into some, you know, predetermined metric.
Yeah, no, he truly is the most interesting Pope that we've had in a good long time. And I think I believe that you know, people say, well, he does, he's eschewing the things of wealth and the trappings of the office because he sleeps in the dormitory with the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
I think he does that because he's afraid of getting shot.
No.
He figures if he's gonna get whacked, he wants lots of witnesses.
I think you've seen The Godfather 3 a couple of too many times. My favorite Godfather 3 story is my friend Jason didn't believe me that it was terrible, and my he's watching it, and my wife comes in, she goes, "How's the movie going?" He goes, "Well, they shot a pope, and then I got up, and I went to get something to eat, and I came back, and they shot another pope."
It was Godfather 3, of course you got up.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. He watched all three in a row in this one nine-and-a-half-hour session. But the problem with that is you end with Godfather 3.
And you end with that, the rule of three with that as well. Check out my website, timslegel.com.
And my website, brianmiller.com, Brian with a Y.
See you next week.
See you next week, guys.